Anything we asked for, we gonna get it. Well, hungry folks pray for food, but they sure don't all get fed. And sick folks beg him for healing, but lots of them die or maybe live on in bed. Jesus had to mean something different from what folks think he meant, else to my mind he was a dang fool to go around promising what God wouldn't do. But Jesus want no fool love, so what did he mean?
Distressed, she sat up and said to Grandpa, "Please, Rucker, don't talk sacrilege."
"It ain't sacrilege. Miss Effabel says when she can't think what to have for dinner, she asks God, and right off he gives her idea. To my thinking, that's sacrilege."
Miss Love really laughed.
"There's not a woman in the world who hasn't prayed what to cook for dinner, Rucker."
"Well, God give you all cookbooks for that." "Anyhow, when I got to pondering on it last night, the word asked commenced to jump at me like sheep coming over a fence. Asked, asked, asked. But asked for what? For meat and bread? For healing miracles? Are we supposed to ask, 'Lord, give me the answers on the arithmetic test? Lord, get me hired over the next fellow? Lord, give me a son?' Gosh almighty, how I used to ask that in love."
He looked long and tender at her and kissed her cheek.
"And didn't God send you Will Tweedy?"
"Gosh, I hadn't thought of that."
"Maybe he did," said Grandpa. "Then again, maybe he sent me you so I could have another crack at it."
I could see Miss Love blush, and out in the hall I blushed. Grandpa didn't.
"But I don't think he planned Will Tweedy for me. I don't even think he sent me you. You and Will just happen in the way of things. God ain't said you won't get nothing good less'n you pray for it. But I'm sure thankful for you, love."
He touched a finger to her chin and her mouth, then rested his hand on her cheek. His voice softened as he went on.
"Another thing to think on. Some folks ain't said pea turkey to God in years. They don't ask him for nothing, don't specially try to be good, and don't love nobody the way Jesus said to, except their own self. But they gonna get just about as much or as little in the way of earthly goods as the rest of us. They gonna have sorrows and joys, failures and good times. And when they come down sick, they gonna get well or die one, just same as the praying folks. So don't that tell you something about praying? Ain't the best praying just being with God and talking a while, like he's a good friend, instead of like he runs a store and you've come in a-hoping to get a bargain?"
Miss Love frowned. "Rucker, you can't write Holy Scripture. It's already been written."
"Well, I can sure question what it means."
With a heavy groan, trying to shift a little to get comfortable, he put his arm across her stomach again.
"And it finally come to me in the night, what Jesus must have meant by asked. You want to be like them folks with rock brains, or you want to hear it?"
She smiled. "I want to hear it." I put in my journal all the above, also the answer that had come to Grandpa.
When Jesus said, "Ask and ye shall receive," I don't think he meant us to pray, "Lord, spare my child," or "make it rain for the crops," or "don't let my business fail." I don't even think Jesus meant us to ask for a house or a piano.
She put her hand on his open palm. He laughed and lifted her hand and kissed it.
"No, and not even for a husband or any other such favor. The Lord's Prayer does say, 'Give us this day our daily bread,' but that's the only dang thing Jesus asked for in the whole prayer that you can touch. There ain't nothing in the Lord's Prayer says, 'Make me well.' I'm tempted to pray that right now, hurting like I am. But I don't think Jesus meant us to think we can get healed just by begging for it."
Grandpa laughed kind of rueful.
"God made us so we want to stay alive. He put healing power in our bodies. We don't have to beg him to save us. All we got to do is accept being sick, do what Doc says, and trust that God wants us to get well if and we can."
Miss Love broke in. "In the Bible, Jesus only healed the people who asked him to, and believed he could. If Jesus could heal, can't God, if we pray and have faith?"
"Well, faith ain't no magic wand or money-back guarantee, either one. It's just a way of living. It means you don't worry through the days. It means you gonna be holding on to God in good or bad times, and you accept whatever happens. It means you respect life like it is, like God made it, even when it ain't what you'd order from the wholesale house. Faith don't mean the Lord is going to make lions lay down with lambs just 'cause you asked him to, or make fire not burn. Some folks, when they pray to get well and don't even get better, they say God let them down. But I say that wasn't even what Jesus was a-talking about. When Jesus said, "Ask and you'll get it," he was given a guarantee of spiritual healing, not body healing. He was saying that if and you get beat down, scared to death you can't do what you got to do, or scared you're going to die, or scared folks won't like you, why, all you got to do is put your hand in God's and he'll lift you up. I know it for a fact, love. I can pray, "Lord, help me not be scared." And I don't know how, but it's like a eraser wipes the fears away. And I found out long time ago, when I look on what I got to stand as a dang hardship or a burden, it seems too heavy to carry. But when I look on the same dang thing as a challenge, why, standing it or accepting it is like you done in it a contest. It even gets exciting, waiting to see how everything's gonna turn out. Grandpa stopped to move a little and his face twisted with pain. But he went on. Jesus meant us to ask God to help us stand the pain, not beg him to take the pain away. We can ask for comfort and hope and patience and courage and to be gracious when things ain't gone our way, and we'll get what we asked for. There ain't no guarantee that we ain't gonna have no troubles and ain't gonna die, but sure as frogs croak and cows bellow, God'll forgive us if and we asked him to.
He will also help us be forgiving, said Miss Love, smiling. Rucker, why don't you try to forgive Clem Crummy? You really ought to take your name off his hotel. You got even with him, isn't that enough?
Grandpa laughed. Not quite. I want to rub his face in the dirt a while before I let him up, love. Somebody's got to learn him better than to cheat folks, else he's liable to land in jail. Besides, me and God ain't got time for Clem right now. We too busy trying to make a challenge out of them broke ribs and this here twisted knee. And I'm busy trying to accept the loss of my dignity.
Out there in the cool hall, afraid even to wiggle my foot lest they hear me, I wondered if I could ever accept Lightfoot McClendon, Mary, and Hosey Roach.
Well, Miss Blakesley, Grandpa said, running his hand down the side of her waist and hip and thigh, do you think that's what Jesus might have meant? Don't it make sense?
She thought a minute. If you talked like this at a Wednesday night prayer meeting, Rucker, most people would walk out. They'd say you're not a Christian and shouldn't be allowed to speak in God's house. But to me it makes beautiful sense. Thank you for it.
Remind me to tell Will Tweedy here.
I slid down to the floor. Just by peeping around the doorframe, I could still see them if I wanted to. But what I wanted to do was ponder what old Grandpa just said. Then Miss Love changed the subject, and I had to listen instead of think. Rucker, do you know they've made up a committee to find a new name for Cold Sassy?
I heard, but they'll change Cold Sassy over my dead body.
What if they name it Blakesley? Wouldn't you like that? Our name being on the map might help us sell cars.
He laughed. Blakesley's too much like Blakely. That's a town in South Georgia. Anyhow, the Blakesleys want nothing special to the town.
You're special to the town?
Yeah, but not like Miss Mattie Lou. Now, she was descended from two pioneer families, the Toys and the Willises both. But Toy would be a silly name for a town, and Willis ain't much better.
Grandpa paused.
Will Tweedy's name ain't William, you know. It's Willis.
Trying again to get comfortable, Grandpa moved his arm up from Miss Love's stomach and, by gosh, let his hand rest right between her bosoms. And like she didn't even notice where his hand was, she moved her head over on his shoulder. Her breath quickened as his fingers traced the curve of her neck and wandered careless toward the soft flesh below.
God help me, love, he said softly. I ain't so bad hurt I don't feel nothing.
She didn't say a word. The smile left her face and her lips parted. If you thought about it, me spying on them through the slit of space between the open door and the door frame was right humorous. What was funny as heck was Grandpa with that bruised, swelled-up nose, the big knot like a horn on his forehead, the black eyes like a dern raccoon's mask, the scab over one eye like a sword slash on a pirate, the itchy 3-day sprout and the gray whiskers.
and Miss Love gazing at him like he was Prince Charming come to the costume ball dressed up as a toady frog.
"What do you think about Enterprise?" she asked sleepily. "Or Progressive City? What about Sheffield? Those were suggested in last week's paper."
"Any one of them names on a postmark would bore me to death, just like commerce does. They say a Englishman come through Harmony Grove in 1901, selling silverware. The next year he come through again, and like to had a fit when he seen Welcome to Commerce, where it used to say Welcome to Harmony Grove. He'd send in Harmony Grove to name a new park over in England, and it won him a $500 prize, but over on this side of the ocean, folks thought it sounded tacky and countrified."
"Cold Sassy wouldn't win a prize anywhere," Miss Love said. "Admit that."
"No, it wouldn't, but it suits the town."
"You suit me, Rucker." Her eyes all shiny, she looked at him and murmured, "The last few months with you." Her lips trembled. "Dear Rucker, I think you know, but I want to say it. This has been the only really happy time of my whole life."
Grandpa smiled and touched her hair. "I can't say it's the onlyest happy time for me, ma'am, but they sure ain't never been any to equal it."
She giggled. "Now quit saying ma'am to me. That's what people call old ladies or their betters."
"You're my better."
"No, I ain't. I'm just your—"
A look of surprise crossed her face and she burst out laughing.
"Good Lord, Rucker, I just said ain't. Before you know it, I'll be saying, it ain't."
He tried not to laugh to save his ribs.
"Well, come here, honey. Learn me how to talk right."
Wincing, Grandpa pulled her close and kissed her hard. Then, keeping his mouth on hers, he loosed the pins from her hair. Just as it fell around her neck in a wavy brown mass, he jerked away.
"Your dang nose," he yelped. "It hit my nose."
Quick tears filled his eyes. Then he whispered,
"Didn't hurt at all,"
and kissed her again, but a lot more careful. Long minutes later, I heard her whisper,
"If I held you tight as I want to, Rucker, your nose and your ribs and your knee couldn't stand the pain."
"Then don't do it," he whispered back, kissing each freckled cheek. "I can tell you pain don't do nothing for romance."
"Remember that when you rub stiff whiskers on my face and I say ouch instead of oh, darling."
He rubbed his chin against her cheek.
"Well'm, they ain't stiff now."
"Don't say well'm."
"All right'm."
He laughed and kissed her again.
"Oh, dear, dear man. I love you. I love you."
They quit talking then and drifted off to sleep and I tiptoed out. I was ashamed of myself and embarrassed. But by golly, I had my missing last chapter. If Grandpa and Miss Love weren't already living happy ever after, they would be soon as he got well. But the last chapter wasn't finished. By middle of the week, Grandpa was coughing and running a little fever. By Friday, it hurt him to breathe and it liked to kill him when he coughed. Mama went down and stayed all day. Doc came by every chance he could. Saturday morning, just as we sat down to breakfast, here came little Timmy Hopkins, saying Miss Blakesley wanted Mr. Hort to ring up Dr. Slaughter. Said tell him Mr. Blakesley was having a bad chill, and he'd coughed up some dark, rusty sputum. Chapter 49. I went in the Cadillac to fetch Doc, who began fussing at Grandpa before he got in the room hardly.
"I don't care if it does hurt to breathe, Rucker. You got to get some air down there."
He put his hand on Grandpa's forehead.
"Hot as a firecracker."
Despite all the blankets on him, Grandpa was shaking like a dog pulled out of a frozen pond. As Dr. Slaughter bent over him with the stethoscope, he asked,
"What do you think I got, Doc?"
"Shut up, Rucker. I can't hear with you a-talking."
Doc listened all over his chest and his back, too.
"Where does it hurt when you cough?"
"Between my shoulder blades. You reckon it's a tetrapleurisy?"
Doc straightened up.
"No, it's a tetch pneumonia, Rucker. More than a tetch, tell you the truth. I can hear the rails. But you're strong as an ox, you know. You're going to pull through all right."
Out in the hall, though, Dr. Slaughter told us he was worried. Rucker's tough, but losing all that blood ain't gonna help, and he sure could do without them broke ribs. He could do without the pneumonia, for that matter. He sighed.
I don't understand, said Miss Love, dazed. I thought I was doing all I should for him, but he got worse so fast.
It ain't your fault, honey. That's the way pneumonia is. It comes on with a bang, then it has to run its course, and we won't know which way it'll go till the crisis comes. Doc put on his hat. Now listen to me, Miss Love, he said. Rucker's fever is already 105. It could go a lots higher. For sure he's going to get lots worse before he gets better. So you let Mary Willis and Loma come up here and help with the nursing, you hear me?
I couldn't ask them to do that.
You ain't got to ask them. You just got to let them. He gets over the chill, y'all going to be sponging him off night and day. We got to keep his fever down, else it might cook his brains. You understand, Miss Love? And keep the windows open. He needs fresh air. Don't let the whole dang family sit in there around the bed using up the oxygen. My mother and Aunt Loma arrived right after he left, just as Doc knew they would. After school, I went to the store as usual, but Papa told me to go on to Grandpa's and stay there. Get the chores done, he said, and be there in case they need to send for help. Too bad Miss Love ain't got a telephone. It was awful listening to Grandpa cough and hack and moan. I was glad to go get busy outside. In my mind, I can still picture Granny's rose garden that day, the bushes decorated with buds and blossoms. But at the time, I just glanced at the garden and went on to the barn to see after the animals. While I was pitching hay, Miss Love came out and stood by the pasture gate. I climbed down from the loft to see if she needed anything, but she just shook her head, watching as Mr. Beautiful galloped up and put his head over the railing to be petted. She rubbed his ears and stroked his neck, but her mind wasn't on him.
If your grandfather dies, she said bitterly, I won't stay in Cold Sassy any longer than it takes to sell the house. I hate this town. It's like life, it gives and then it takes away.
I couldn't bear the thought of Cold Sassy without Grandpa or her, either one. As we started back to the house, I begged her, Ma'am, don't give up on him. Like Doc said, he's strong. He's gonna get well, hear?
That night we were all there for supper, even Mary Toy and Campbell Jr. Miss Love sponged Grandpa off while the rest of us ate.
Mama was just leaving the table to take her turn with him when we heard Grandpa say real loud, Miss Love, you better get on back to the store now. He paused for breath. We're much obliged, but Miss Mattie Lou don't need no more help.
Folks clattered onto plates as Papa and Aunt Loma and I jumped up and dashed to the sick room, leaving Mary Toy and poor little Campbell Jr. sitting there confused and scared. We got to the bedroom door in time to hear Grandpa say, Best go on now, Miss Love. They short-handed at the store.
But I live here, Rucker. Remember? I'm your...
Miss Mattie Lou?
Looking toward the door, not seeing us at all, he said brightly,
You want to serve Miss Love some cake? She's got to get back to the store directly.
Grandpa had a bad spell of coughing then. Soon as he could speak, he said,
Did you ever get Miss Pauline's hat finished, Miss Love? She come in yesterday, asking about it.
Call me Love, Rucker,
she begged, kneeling down by the bed so she could look right in his face.
Please call me Love.
Trying hard not to cough again, it hurt so bad, and looking right at her, he asked Miss Mattie Lou for some water. At that, Miss Love rose to her feet, tears streaming down her cheeks. My mother reached out like to a hurt child, and Miss Love stumbled into her arms. I couldn't stand it. I fled to the back porch, knelt down by the tall slab table, and begged God to let Grandpa get well. Mama and I stayed all night, her taking turns with Miss Love at the sickbed. The fever raged despite all the sponging, and Grandpa couldn't sleep for coughing and talking. Sometimes he just mumbled gibberish. Other times it was real sentences, but they didn't make sense. Then again, he'd speak clear as anything, telling jokes or carrying on a conversation with some person we couldn't see. For a while, Grandpa was back in the war with his daddy. There would be a handful of words, then he'd get quiet, and Miss Love would say he's gone to sleep, thank God. But soon he'd take up where he left off. I remember him mumbling something about a battlefield.
It was awful, Pa. All them dead Yankees laying there. I tried to find you some boots, but they just want none left. Our boys have done helped theirselves.
He talked about seeing a Yankee balloon.
Pa, you reckon they spotted our battlements? If and they did, Lord help us.
And Grandpa sat bolt upright in the bed. I helped Miss Love ease him back down on his side.
Who are you, ma'am? He asked as his eyes focused.
Remembering that Grandpa had been a boy like me in the war, she said, I'm your nurse, son. They brought you to the hospital.
Where's my daddy at?
On the next cot. But let's don't wake him up. He's worn out.
We ain't gone march tomorrow.
He pulled nervous at his whiskers.
No, don't talk any more now. Try to rest.
I brought in another pan of water. Miss Love wrung out the towel again, and slowly, so weary, she wiped his back and his neck, his face and arms, and then his legs. After a while he seemed to sleep, but in no time was coughing again and talking. He wasn't in the war now. He was with Miss Mattie Lou, coughing and mumbling disconnected sentences picked out of the air from this or that time in their life. He was a graphophone record kept on a shelf for 30 years and getting played again now. His eyes were unnatural bright, his breathing short and fast and difficult, and what he coughed up was tinged with bright red blood. About 10 o'clock, Mama talked Miss Love into lying down a while, even if you can't sleep. As Mama bent over the wash basin on the floor to wring out a towel, Grandpa fixed his eyes on her, but it was Granny that he saw.
Miss Mattie Lou, there's something I got to confess, hon. You deserve to know what kind of man you done pledged yourself to marry.
Oh, law, was Mama fixin' to hear how he'd loved Miss Love from the minute he laid eyes on her?
I've been ashamed to tell you, but I nearly got run out of them hills last month.
Then he told about calling hisself to preach. With her and him fixin' to get married, it was gonna be his last peddlin' walk through the mountains, and he was just sick and tired of sleeping on the ground. Figured the church folks would put a preacher up and feed him, too.
I acted a lie, Miss Mattie Lou, and it sure did backfire, for I was hardly into my sermon.
His voice trailed off.
Hush now, Pa,
said my mother, wiping his chest as best she could around the binding, which wasn't easy with him lying on his left side to favor the broke ribs. I sure wished Granny was here. She could always think of something to do for a sick person. But that night Mama was like Granny.
Pa, try to take some water, she'd say, lifting his head and holding a glass to his cracked, parched lips.
Then she'd rub his mouth with mentholatum or maybe lay a wet wash rag over his eyes.
Sit down and rest, Mama, I finally told her. I'll wash him.
Staring right at me, pulling at his whiskers kind of frantic, Grandpa said,
Miss Mattie Lou?
I'm Will, sir. I'm your boy.
Granny's clock had just chimed midnight when Miss Love came back in, her eyes dark-circled, her green print dress wrinkled.
I'm afraid I dozed off, Mary Willis, she whispered. Is he better? Has he slept any?
My mother shook her head.
No, he can't rest for talking. I can't understand why Dr. Slaughter don't come. He said he'd come.
He said he'd come if he could. Miss Herma is having her baby. I guess he couldn't leave her. I'll take over now, Mary Willis. You try to get some sleep. Use the bed in the front room.
Miss Love had become businesslike and mechanical.
Will you go lie down on the daybed in the hall?
I ain't tired, Miss Love. I'll stay.
Grandpa drifted into a fitful sleep, then waked with a start about 2:30, and between gasps for breath went to raging at something or somebody, all the time pulling at his whiskers.
We've got to get him quiet, said Miss Love. Will, can you manage by yourself?
I nodded and reached for the wet towel. She tiptoed out, and in a minute there came to my ears, and to Grandpa's, I could tell, the sound of piano music. Miss Love played hymn after hymn. Faith of Our Fathers, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, Rock of Ages, Abide With Me. All his favorites, chording slower and slower, quieter and quieter. And Grandpa calmed down. At daybreak, the fever was still high. He was back with Granny when Dr. Slaughter arrived. Mama had gone on home, Aunt Loma arrived to fix our breakfast and then took over the sponges so we could eat, but we all carried our plates to the sick room. Miss Love let her eggs turn cold while she hovered over Grandpa. Finally, he spoke to her, spoke her name.
"Miss Love," he whispered.
Oh, she was so excited.
"Miss Love, make Miss Mattie Lou rest some here. She's been up all night seeing after me."
Miss Love looked like she'd been slapped.
"I feel sick, Loma," she said, and left the room crying.
When she didn't come back and didn't come back, I said, "Aunt Loma, you think I ought to go see about her?"
"Maybe you better."
I figured she was out at the barn, and she was. The black gelding had trotted up to her, but she paid him no mind. She heard me coming and turned quick toward me.
"Well, he's not..."
"No, him.
Dr. Slaughter thinks he won't make it. He said so this morning. Will, he just can't die. Oh, I've got to tell him something. Something I can't say with Miss Mattie Lou always in there."
She bust out crying, then all of a sudden threw her head back and went to laughing. Laughed like a crazy woman. Like she couldn't stop. Finally, I got mad and shook her.
"Stop, Miss Love. Ain't nothing funny."
Oh, you just don't know."
Out there in the May morning, she could hardly talk for laughing.
"I'll tell you, Will, so you can laugh, too. You see this second wife?"
She pointed to herself.
"She thought she was going to have a baby, but she wasn't sure. After she was sure, she decided to wait till her husband's birthday to tell him. But..."
Miss Love stopped laughing. Her voice went flat.
"But now he's dying, and I can't tell him because... Dear God in heaven, Will, how can I tell your grandpa right in front of your granny that he has fathered my child? He'd hate me. He wouldn't believe it was possible. Will, he has forgotten all about me and him."
Gosh, a baby. It was going to end up just like Mama and Aunt Loma said it would.
"I can't bear it if he dies without knowing, and knowing might even make him fight to live."
"He's already fighting to live, Miss Love. He'll fight to his last breath."
"But if he knew this, it might make all the difference."
And she burst into tears. I didn't know what to do. Finally, I said, "Miss Love, hush up here." I sounded just like Grandpa. "Ma'am, he always says when you don't know which way to turn, do something. Don't do nothing. Listen, ain't it the fever causing him to be funny turned? I mean the delirium. Ain't that from the high fever?" She nodded, holding both hands to her cheeks.
"We managed to cool him down some, but it's never enough."
"What if we could cool him down quicker? If he came to himself even for a minute, you could talk to him. Why don't we put him in the bathtub? It'd soak him cool a lot quicker than all that sponging, wouldn't it?"
"I never heard of doing that."
She was excited, then worried.
"But it might chill him too much. We'd have to ask Dr. Slaughter first."
"But don't it make sense?"
"Let me think, Will."
Out there by the pasture gate, she quickly took the pins out of her tousled hair, pulled it back, twisted it into a knot at the back of her head, and pinned it tight. Even with her hair so plain and her eyelids swollen from crying, Miss Love looked beautiful to me, for she had come alive. "I could run get Loomis," I went on, excited. "Loomis could pick Grandpa up like a rag doll, Miss Love, not jostle his ribs or anything. Just bend over easy and lay him in the water." Hope upon us, we ran back to the house. It scared me to death when Aunt Loma rushed to meet us at the back door.
"He's had a big sweat," she shouted. "Drench the bed. The fever's down, Love, at least for now, and he's gone to sleep. He knew me, Love." "Oh, thank God."
Miss Love's eyes filled with tears.
"But, oh, Will, what if I've missed my chance?"
Loma said she'd go on home and tell Sister and Brother Hort the good news. "You stay here, Will, just in case. Love, try to get some rest." I thought Miss Love would want to sit there alone with him, but she asked me to stay. Grandpa was laying on his left side as usual. She sat beside the bed, facing him, in the same rocking chair he had sat in to watch Granny. Sometimes she would lay her head on the mattress and stretch out her hand just to touch him. I know she prayed. I could see her lips move. Every few minutes, she'd feel of his forehead or his arm. At some point she murmured, "I'm dying to wake him up, but I don't dare. This sleep could make all the difference.
Will, honey, won't he be thrilled if it's a boy? I just know it will be a boy.
I didn't tell her, but Mama used to say Granny was always sure it would be a boy. She got up to pace the room.
Will, what if the fever goes way up again before he wakes?
At that moment, Grandpa went to coughing. His eyes opened wide as he gasped for breath. Miss Love looked at the sputum he spat into a rag.
It's so bloody, Will, she whispered.
When the coughing subsided, Grandpa started to drift away again, but she called him back.
Rucker, look at me.
He opened his eyes. You're so beautiful, he mumbled.
How do you feel, dear?
She spoke softly.
Well, I'm taking it leisurely.
He pulled at his whiskers. She leaned over the bed to get her face close to his.
I've got something wonderful to tell you, Rucker. Can you hear me, dear?
Gazing at her, his face softened. He put his hand on her hair, and something like a weak grin passed over his face.
I'm Rucker. Pleased to meet you, love. Oh, love, I'm so sick. I just can't get enough air.
You're going to get well, Rucker. I'll make you get well. Don't go back to sleep yet, please. I've got to tell you what I have for your birthday. The most wonderful thing has happened, Rucker.
It's to my credit that I left the room. I didn't stand out there in the hall and listen either. I went to the kitchen and drank some milk, then mixed some meal and water for Granny's chickens, and went out to dump it in their pan. They ran up to me, clucking and shoving. And then here came old T.R. Sensing my joy, he jumped up on me and licked my face, and I hugged him good, pulling his ears and scratching his belly. Church bells were beginning to ring all over town. I wondered would Papa attend preaching now that Loma would have told them that Grandpa was better. I thought I ought to go back in and see if he was still awake. I couldn't wait to hear what he'd say about the baby. I went in the house, tiptoed up the hall. It looked like he was sleeping again, and Miss Love, too. She had stretched out on the bed beside him, her hand on his. The house was quiet and peaceful at last, and I was wore out. I thought I'd just go lay down on the daybed a few minutes. I don't know how long I slept. Miss Love's scream woke me up. Grandpa was dead. Chapter 50. I ran in there. Miss Love, still on the bed, was raised up on one arm staring at him. I waited for her to say something, but she just kept staring. I heard somebody come in the front hall.
Miss Love? Mary Willis?
It was Miss Effie Bell.
Oh, God help me, whispered Miss Love. Keep her talking out there, Will. I've got to... Oh, God, just a minute more.
Miss Effie Bell had heard the scream as she was coming in from church. Her pink lip wart quivered, and she said...
Rucker's passed on, ain't he, Will?
Yes'm.
Well, God knows best.
Her eyes missed and she touched my face with her wizened hand.
You gon' take it hardest, Will. You was his favorite in all the world.
I thought I ought to say that Miss Love was his favorite now, but what was the use?
One time when your granddaddy was a baby, I held him in my lap. Who'd have thought I'd outlive him?
She said, trying hard to keep a hold of herself.
And we've been next-door neighbors for I don't know how long. Lord, why couldn't it have been Bubba? I'm so tired, and Bubba just can't seem to die.
She sighed and patted my shoulder.
I'd like to go in and see him, Will.
At that moment, we heard the bedroom door close, and Miss Love came up the hall. She looked like a stone. Her eyes were dark-circled and her skin pale. There was no expression at all on her face as she said,
Will, you'd better hurry home and tell your family. They'll have to call Dr. Slaughter.
Yes'm, I was just fixing to go. Here's Miss Effie Bell to see you.
The wizened hand reached out to pat Miss Love's arm.
I'll be more than glad to stay with you till Mary Willis and them get here.
You're very kind, but
I'd like to be alone right now. I hope you understand.
Granny's clock chimed 12:30 as I followed Miss Effie Bell out of Grandpa's house and ran home. Papa had attended morning preaching, but he was already back home when I rushed in. Dad must have been written all over my face because I didn't have to say a word except how and when. "Run clean up and put on your suit, Will," said Papa. "Folks gonna be coming in all day. Out of respect for your granddaddy, you ought to look presentable, but make haste." As the family hurried out to the car, Papa said we had to go by the store.
"Are you crazy, Hoyt?"
asked Mama. She had cried all the time she was getting dressed and looked it. "There's a sealed letter in the safe," he said, taking the driver's seat. "Your daddy told me about it a month or more ago. Said if anything happened to him, I was to get the letter out and read it to the family." He motioned me to turn the crank. The engine sputtered but didn't catch.
"Can't it wait, Brother Hoyt?" Loma screeched. "I want to see Pa."
"No, it can't wait. If you want to know exactly how your daddy put it, he said, 'Get that letter for my body's cold and don't let nobody move me till it's read.'" Miss Love came out of the room where Grandpa was and walked slowly up the hall to greet us. She hadn't fixed herself up or anything while I was gone. Smelling a little of turpentine, she was still in the soiled green print dress she'd worn all yesterday and all last night and all this morning. She hugged everybody the way folks do when they don't know what to say, but she did it as if there was nothing to be said. Mama whispered, "Can we see him?"
"Certainly, of course," said Miss Love.
Leading the way, she said Dr. Slaughter had already come and gone.
"He said to convey his condolences and tell you he was sorry not to stay. Miss Herma is having a bad labor."
I couldn't believe the change in Grandpa. He was turned on his back, his head on a single pillow, his right arm outside the fresh clean sheet that had been spread over him and the bed. His face was shaved, the mustache trimmed to a neat pencil line again, the hair combed and slicked down. Miss Love must have used some of her freckle cover cream to fade the bruises and lighten the blackness around his eyes.
"Don't he look natural?" Mama whispered.
My throat swelled till I could hardly get my breath. To me, he looked spiffy, and I just wanted so bad to tell him. I saw that Papa, Holden Campbell Jr., was having just as hard a time as I was. Whereas I was grieving for my grandpa who had died, Papa was mourning for the man who had given him his chance in life. I don't know why, but right then it finally dawned on me that Papa had wanted to please Grandpa out of respect and gratitude, not from kowtowing. I watched as he tried not to cry. All of a sudden, still carrying the baby, he left the room. Aunt Loma, Mary Toy, and Mama stood around the bed crying. Miss Love stood there dry-eyed, looking down on the father of her unborn child. I found Papa in the parlor. He had lifted Campbell Jr. up to the window so he could watch a hen leading her baby chicks towards the front yard. "See the biddies?" asked Papa, and little Camp jumped with delight. "What do we do now, sir?" I asked. "Call Mr. Birdsong?"
"Not yet, son." He sighed deep. "I have to read that letter first. I reckon we better go back in there and start."
For the reading, Miss Love sat down in the rocking chair, pulled as close to Grandpa as she could get it. Papa had handed over the baby to Aunt Loma. She stood jiggling him in her arms to keep him quiet. Mama was holding Mary Toy's hand, but my little sister begged, "Will stay by me?" And I put my arm around her, held her close. Papa walked around to Granny's side of the bed and tore open the envelope. "Mr. Blakesley didn't tell me what's in this," he began. "He just said if anything happened to him, I was to get the letter out of the safe and read it to y'all right away." He looked over at the widow. "Are you all right, Miss Love? You rather go in the parlor?"
"No, Mr. Hoyt. Please read it."
She placed her hand on Grandpa's shoulder. The letter was in his big sprawling hand on a long ruled sheet torn out of the store's ledger book. I copied it later, word for word, like Grandpa had it. "To my dearly beloved wife, Love Simpson Blakesley, to my beloved daughters, Mary Willis Blakesley Tweedy and Loma Blakesley Williams, to my beloved son-in-law, Hoyt Tweedy, who is like a son to me." Papa had to wait a minute before he could go on. "To my grandsons, Hoyt Willis Tweedy and Campbell Williams Jr., and to my granddaughter, Mary Toy Tweedy. This is about the disposal of my earthly remains. Please recollect the funeral I gave Miss Mattie Lou. I tried to make it a nice thank you to her for living. Likewise, I gave Camp a nice funeral. I believe God means us to stand up to suffering, not end it with a bullet.
A man killing himself ain't nothing I can understand, but I can't forgive it. Anyhow, I wanted Camp's funeral to say, "Judge not that ye be not judged." I could hear Aunt Loma snuffling. "Now I want my burying to remind folks that death ain't always awful. God invented death. It's in God's plan for it to happen. So when my time comes, I don't want no trip to Birdsong's Emporium or any other. Dressing somebody up to look alive don't make it so." My daddy paused. I could tell he was reading ahead to himself because his face flushed all of a sudden and he had to take a deep breath before he could go on. "I don't want no casket. It's a waste of money. What I would really like is to be wrapped in 2 or 3 feed sacks and laid right in the ground. But that would bother you all, so use the pine box upstairs at the store that Miss Matty Lou's coffin come in. I've been saving it. And though I'd just as soon be planted in the vegetable patches anywhere, I don't think anybody would ever eat what growed there after. Anyhow, take me right from home to the cemetery. Ain't no use paying Birdsong for that hearse. Get Loomis to use his wagon. Especially if it is hot weather, my advisement is don't waste no time." Mama, scandalized, had both hands up to her mouth. Mary Toy had turned white as a sheet. I held her tight. Aunt Loma seemed excited, like when watching a spooky stage play. I felt excited myself. I wondered, was this Grandpa's idea of a practical joke, or was it a sermon? Maybe after he made his point, he'd put a postscript saying that when he was dead it really wouldn't matter to him what kind of funeral he had. But I doubted it. Miss Love, she kept her eyes on Grandpa, lying there so unnatural quiet, so unnatural still. Papa read on. "I want Loomis and them to dig my grave right next to Miss Matty Lou. I don't want no other preacher there but him, and don't let him give a sermon. It would go on for hours. Just let him pray for God to comfort my family. I would like Will Tweedy to read some Bible verses, and I want you all to sing Blessed Be the Tie That Binds. Also, I want Hoyt to read some verses I'm going to copy on another sheet and put in with this letter. The title is Be Still My Soul. I want Miss Love to know that the line in the poem about love's purest joys restored means I want her to try to find a way to be happy after I am gone. I expect her to outlive me by some years, and I don't want her to live drab. I want folks to say, there goes Rucka Blakesley's happy, good-looking, pie-and-a-playing widow. I don't want them to say she sure has gone downhill since he passed." All eyes turned on Miss Love, but she sat like stone. Papa read on. "I don't want nobody at the burial except you all and them at the store that want to come. Don't put not dead but sleeping on my stone. Write it dead, not sleeping. Being dead under 6 foot of dirt won't bother me at all, but I hate for it to sound like I've been buried alive. Now then, the funeral party. In case you all ain't noticed, the first 3 letters of the word funeral spells fun. So a week or two after I die, you all have dinner on the grounds at one of the churches, or if they ain't in favor, have it at the ballpark. I don't care which. I think a Wednesday at 1 o'clock would be fine since the stores close anyhow. I hope everybody in Cold Sassy will come, white and colored. Have a happy get-together with kinfolks and old friends. Tell funny stories about me and such. I would like for you all to ask the town band and the Negro band to come play parade music, and also tunes like Tarara Boom Die, and lively hymns like When They Ring Them Golden Bells. Get everybody to sing out on Don't You Hear the Bells Now Ringin', Don't You Hear the Angels Singin'. 'Tis the glory, hallelujah, jubilee, and so on. Let it be known ahead that we going to have favors. That will bring out the crowd. But don't buy nothing that cost much, unless it's in the cold winter time. Let's set up apple bobbin and Dunkin' booths for the children. Maybe have a shooting gallery for the men. And let's have a hog calling contest and a crowing contest, funny things that will make folks laugh. See, can you get some little colored boys to do buck and wing dancing? Maybe we can have a backwards automobile race and race bicycles backwards, too. Oh, it's going to be a fine, fancy day. Now, you all can cry and wear black at my burying if you want to, but I don't want nobody at the funeral party to wear black or cry either one. Don't go if you can't be pleasant. If you do go, dress up and act happy. You can cry later.
Anybody who don't follow my wishes, as written here, is out of my will. I do not wish my will to be read till after the funeral party. Well, that's all I can think of. I hope it will be a long time between this writing and when Hoyt has to read it. I want all of you to always remember what my family meant to me and how blessed I was to have two such fine wives. I think they was both dang marvels. Enoch Rucker Blakesley. The paper was signed, dated, sealed, and witnessed. There was no choice but to hurry with the burying, despite folks were already bringing in food and sad faces. Loomis got his two older sons to go dig the grave. Then, while Cold Sassy gathered on the front veranda and in the parlor, we gathered in there around the deathbed with the door closed, watching as Loomis, weeping, lifted Grandpa and gently laid him in the coffin box. Miss Love had fixed a sort of padding out of clean feed sacks printed in bright red and white checks. It liked to kill Mama, those feed sacks, but Miss Love acted like they were the usual thing for a coffin liner. After my daddy said a prayer, she draped two more of the checked feed sacks over his body and then, hesitating only a moment, covered his face. Loomis nailed the box shut, and he and Papa and I towed her Grandpa out the back door to the wagon. It sure would have tickled him to see all the neighbors on his front porch staring with their mouths open as Loomis drove the mule team towards the street. Miss Love rode in the wagon with Grandpa. Besides lots of perfume, she had on the black dress she wore to church that time Cold Sassy criticized her for acting like she was in mourning for Granny. As expressionless as the time she was a store mannequin, she sat in the wagon on a sawed-off chair, bracing herself with one hand on the driver's plank and the other on the coffin box. Behind the wagon came the two cars, me driving the Pierce, Papa the Cadillac, and all of us looking straight ahead. It's no credit to me or Aunt Loma that we were enjoying our roles in this melodrama. Mama and Papa sure didn't feel that way. They were ashamed. But if Miss Love was feeling anything like shame, she didn't show it. What Grandpa would have really enjoyed, ha, was the sight of Mr. Birdsong reining in the black horses pulling his ambulance hearse just as our procession turned into the street. Cud and Hope, Uncle Lige, and Hosey were waiting for us at the cemetery gates. I could tell that Hosey had been crying. It was awful, the burying. Such a pitiful little band of mourners, so bumbling without Mr. Birdsong or anybody else to tell us what to do. There hadn't been time to think or feel much of anything except disbelief while we were making all the arrangements. Now that we were actually here in the cemetery, we felt shocked and helpless. Grandpa had only considered what he wanted when he wrote all those instructions. He didn't give a thought to what it would be like for us to gather around a gaping hole before we'd hardly realized he was dead, before we'd hardly even got started on the grieving. And what were we supposed to do? How was the service supposed to start? I could tell the spirit was on Loomis to help us out, but he knew white folks' funerals aren't like colored funerals. He was scared we might not like him taking over. As Papa put one arm around Mama and the other around Mary Toy, Miss Love's composure crumbled and she went to crying. I got the wagon chair for her to sit in and stood by her while she sobbed and wailed. What to do? Black Loomis knew what to do. He lifted his face to the sky and sang, "Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home." By the time the last hum of the word home drifted in and out among the tombstones, all of us felt calmer, and Miss Love hushed as Loomis prayed, "For Mrs. and all us in the family, we ask you to hold us in your bosom, Lord. Hold us and comfort us till we's able to get up and carry on in the land of the living. Bless Jesus, amen." Then Papa pulled a letter out of his pocket. I will now read this poem of Mr. Blakesley's choosing. He wrote that he found it in an old book. He cleared his throat. Be still, my soul, the Lord is on thy side. Bear patiently the cross of grief or pain. Leave to thy God to order and provide. In every change he faithful will remain. Be still, my soul, thy best, thy heavenly friend, through thorny ways leads to a joyful end. Be still, my soul, thy God doth undertake to guide the future as he has the past. Thy hope, thy confidence, let nothing shake. All now mysterious shall be bright at last. Be still, my soul, the waves and winds still know his voice who ruled them while he dwelt below. Papa said, here Mr. Blakesley wrote that he was tired of copying, but he thought the third verse was the best one of all for a funeral. Be still, my soul. The hour is hastening on when we shall be forever with the Lord, when disappointment, grief, and fear are gone, sorrow forgot, love's purest joys restored. Be still, my soul, when change and tears are past, all safe and blessed we shall meet at last. I hadn't really decided which Bible verses to recite. One thing boys and girls growing up in Cold Sassy know a lot of is Bible verses. Maybe I'd do the 23rd Psalm. They always say that at funerals. But then, like a light turned on, it came to me what Grandpa might like. "Ask, and it shall be given you," I began. "Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and to him that knocketh, it shall be opened." "We have the same message in the book of St. John," I said, sounding for all the world like a preacher. "If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full." Well, but how could I just stop there? Those words were worse than nothing if I didn't tell what they meant to Grandpa. Looking at the long, rough box, I spoke timid in a mumbled voice, not preachified at all. Grandpa didn't think Jesus meant by that we should ask God for things or for special favors. He said we could trust that in the nature of things, without asking, we'll get lots of blessings and happy surprises and maybe a miracle or two. When Jesus said, "Ask and you'll get it," he meant things of the Spirit, not the flesh. Right now, for instance, I could ask, "Lord, please raise Grandpa from the dead," but it wouldn't happen. But I can say, "Please, God, comfort me, and I'll get heart's ease." Grandpa said Jesus meant us to ask for hope, forgiveness, and all like that. Asked, "Help us not be scared. Help us not be greedy. Give us courage to try." I was really carried away. "Ask any such, and God will give it to you. But don't ask him not to let fire burn, or say, 'Spare me from death.'" At least, that's what Grandpa said. Right then it dawned on me. By some of what I was saying, I had just revealed to Miss Love that I had spied on them last Sunday. She would know I heard not only Grandpa's sermon, but probably everything else that he said and she said. I couldn't look at her. Later, when I did, she smiled a little at me, like saying it didn't matter now. I couldn't go to sleep that night for wondering would it put Mama in the bed when she heard about Miss Love's baby. I knew she'd be upset, but I doubted she would talk about it to anybody except Papa, because whereas Miss Love had just been her daddy's wife, now she would be the mother of Mama's half-sister or brother. That would put her in the family. And in our family, we don't talk against each other to outsiders. Tossing and turning, I kept remembering the look on Mr. Birdsong's face as he watched our procession move off. But I also remembered our embarrassment and shame at the cemetery and wondered how much Grandpa had really cared about all he made us do. I bet he just wanted to stir up Cold Sassy one last time, give folks something to gossip about. I didn't wonder why nobody in my family even questioned burying him the way he said to. If Grandpa wanted to keep his whiskey in your closet, marry 3 weeks after Granny died, and be buried in feed sacks in a coffin box, if you couldn't say yes, sir, you didn't say no, sir. Him saying what he did about cutting anybody out of his will who tried to interfere was entirely unnecessary. Oh, law, we forgot to sing, "Blessed be the tie that binds." The store stayed closed on Monday. Miss Love made a big black satin wreath for the door, and I went down there and hung it. I meant to go on to school, but for once in my life I didn't want to see Smiley or Pink or Leroy or Dunce or anybody. I didn't want to have to answer dumb questions about the burial. I wished so much for Blueford Jackson. If he were here, he would just sit with me and not talk or ask anything. Well, that's what he was doing in his grave, not talking or asking anything. Likewise Granny and Uncle Camp, and now Grandpa. I sure didn't want to go sit around at Grandpa's house and listen to Cold Sassy pay its respects. I'd done enough and too much of that the past year. What I ended up doing that morning, I went over to old Mr. Billy Wisnant's next to the schoolyard and knocked on the door. The winter hadn't been kind to his rheumatism. He was more bent than ever. "What you want, boy?" he asked, looking real suspicious when he saw who it was. I said, "Sir, if you'll trust me to do it right, I want to cut you some stove wood. I don't mean for pay. I just want to." The next Sunday morning, Miss Love went back to the Methodist church. She wore a navy blue dress and lots of perfume. There were those who said she ought to have on black no matter what Mr. Blakesley wanted, and they didn't think it was fitting for her to be out in public so soon after burying her husband. But as everybody knew by then, Rucker Blakesley had seen to it that nothing about his passing was fitting. So what did it really matter what his widow did? The following Wednesday she wore a red dress and lots of perfume and her brightest big mouth smile to the ballpark for Grandpa's funeral party. She and Aunt Loma were the prettiest ladies there by far. Loma was all dolled up in the flowery dress from New York. Mama didn't wear black, but she didn't wear red or anything flowery. She wore gray. I never saw so much food or so many smiling people. Nobody approved of the party, but knowing what the family was up against, they weren't about to make it worse for us by not coming. Tell the truth, they wouldn't have missed it. With the band music and all, it was like a festival. Miss Love got Mary Toy and me and Pink Predmore and the other boys to give out balloons and stick candy. She first thought of chewing gum, but Mama said nobody but common people would chew it. I overheard Miss Alice Ann Boozer say it served Rucker right after the way he'd done Miss Mattie Lou. Married that Yankee and didn't live a year. You ought to have heard Miss Effie Bell take up for him. I never thought to say it, Alice Ann, but I'm glad now he married her. Miss Love kept his house nice and seems like she made him happy. In between the crowing contest, the backwoods bicycle race and all that, you'd see folks gathered together talking and laughing. One group I went up to, for instance, somebody was telling that Grandpa was the best knuckle-knocker in school when he was a boy. Somebody else told about him getting up in church and praying, "Lord, forgive me for fitting that man, even though if and I had to do it over again, I'd hit him harder." Somebody else said, "Ever hear about the time he beat Wildcat Lindsay in a fist fight? Funniest fight you ever seen." Mr. Pearl was telling another group about the time Rucker turned over the privy at the depot with the Yankee Railroad president in there, and the Yankee offered a $50 reward to anybody who'd tell him who did it. "But nobody would," said Mr. Pearl. "Rucker said he needed the money and was going to go claim the reward himself, but Miss Mattie Lou wouldn't let him." Everybody died laughing about that, and then they joked about Grandpa naming Mr. Clem's hotel after himself. But nobody joked about him saying when he married Miss Love 3 weeks after Granny died that Miss Mattie Lou was as dead as she'd ever be, at least not in my hearing. Mama had been scared folks would criticize and say the family didn't show proper respect not having Grandpa embalmed and not having a church funeral and then getting up a party. To make sure that everybody understood the circumstances, she had showed certain people his letter ordering the cheap burial, and then she let the Cold Sassy Weekly print Grandpa's plans for the funeral party, including, of course, that the whole town was invited. So not only was it written up ahead of time, but it got a big write-up afterwards. "Just as the deceased had requested," said the paper, "a good time was had by all. It's just too bad that the one who would have enjoyed it the most couldn't be there." The family gathered at Grandpa's house that night after supper for the reading of the will. The lawyer was Mr. Predmore, Pink's daddy. My daddy was named executor. First, the document reminded us that the old toy house and furnishings had been deeded over to my beloved wife, Love Simpson Blakesley, at the time of their marriage. I also leave her $1,000, as promised at the time of said marriage. He left Mama the house we were living in and $1,000. Loma would get $1,002, and the house on Julius Street, now rented, which I believe to be of equal value to the others. After payment of all debts and certain bequests, and after the rest of the estate was sold, including houses, farmland, and stock, but not the store, the money was to be divided share and share alike between Miss Love, Mama, and Aunt Loma. Well, that would be less for Miss Love than Mama and them had feared, but a lot more than Miss Love had bargained for back when she said I do. Still and all, to me it seemed fitting her having moved up from housekeeper to bona fide widow. But wait. In the event that I should have another child or children born or unborn at the time of my death, the estate will be divided share and share alike between my wife, my two grown daughters, and this other child or children, if living. Should any of these heirs precede me in death, the deceased's share will go to his or her offspring. If there be no offspring, born or unborn, said share will revert to the estate. Mom and Papa and Aunt Loma didn't bat an eyelash at that. But then they didn't know what I knew. Gosh, what if Miss Love had twins? I waited for her to speak up about the baby, but she didn't. Now Mr. Predmore was reading about the store. Grandpa wanted it to be owned jointly by his widow and children, share and share alike. Papa was to serve as manager for as long as he wanted the job. The first of the individual bequests was for $400 to my grandson, Hort Willis Tweedy, for his education, provided he agrees to come into the store as an associate for a period of at least 10 years after leaving college. Grandpa didn't leave Campbell Jr. or Meritoria a dime. I guess he just forgot about them. To the First Baptist Church of Cold Sassy, he left the sum of $1 in appreciation of its kindness in the matter of my son-in-law Campbell Williams' funeral. Mr. Predmore read that with a straight face. Boy, howdy, what I'd give to be at the deacons' meeting after they heard about the dollar. But there was a sop for the deacons. $200 in memory of my late beloved wife, Mattie Lou Toy Blakesley. Grandpa left the same amount to the Methodist Episcopal Church, south of Cold Sassy, in honor of my beloved wife, Love Simpson Blakesley. The last bequest was for Loomis Toy, the sum of $50 in appreciation of his loyal service to the store and my family. Not much was said after the reading. It's to my family's credit that when we got home, nobody spoke out loud what I'm sure we were thinking about, namely Miss Love's share of the estate. Naturally, I didn't say that most likely she was going to get half of it instead of a third. I wondered when she would tell them about the baby. It would have to be soon. Gosh, what if sure enough the baby was a boy? I couldn't help thinking how in that case, if Granny Blakesley was alive, she would call it worth mentioning that Grandpa finally got what he wanted most in life after he died. I wondered when Miss Love would leave Cold Sassy. Probably not till the baby was born and the estate settled. I wondered if she'd try to sell hers and the baby's interest in the store to my daddy. I wondered if he could afford to buy it. I wanted to talk to Papa and them about my $400, but it hardly seemed like the time. It really made me mad, Grandpa thinking he could buy me like I was Uncle Cam's funeral. It was all right with me if he wanted to pave the way with money for Miss Love to get welcomed back to the Methodist fold, but if I wouldn't spend my life in the store despite caring so much about him, I sure wasn't going to do it for a bribe. Dead or alive, he meant to have his way. Well, in the matter of my future, I meant to have mine. Miss Love came down to our house to tell the family about Grandpa's baby, and I drove her home. We sat there in the car talking, and that's when she told me she had decided not to leave Cold Sassy. "For one thing," she said matter-of-fact, "where would I go? And why should I leave the only family my son will ever have? No matter how your folks feel about me, Will, they'll do right by their baby brother. That's the kind of people they are. They'll make room for him in the family and bring him into the life of the town. He'll know people who enjoyed and respected his father, and he'll know you, Will. You can show him how to fish, play ball, work hard, drive a car. All the things a boy needs to know that I can't teach him. Oh, Will," her voice trembled, "you're so like Rucker. Knowing you, my son will know his father." The child and I were keeping Grandpa alive for Miss Love. Who would keep him alive for me? Grandpa had said Cold Sassy's name would be changed over my dead body, and that is exactly what happened. A month after we buried him in the coffin box, the U.S. Post Office approved a new name, and Cold Sassy became Progressive City. The next spring, the town council voted to widen the road on each side of the railroad tracks, which meant the Cold Sassy tree had to go. It was taken down and the roots chopped up, and I think everybody in town took some home to boil for sassafras tea. I still have a piece of that root, put away in a box with my journal, my can of tobacco tags, the newspaper write-up when I got run over by the train, a photograph of me and Miss Love and Grandpa in the Pierce, my ag college diploma from the university, and the buckeye that Lightfoot gave me. This concludes the reading of Cold Sassy Tree by Olive Ann Burns. Copyright 1984 by Olive Ann Burns.
This book was read by Grover Gardner.
This unabridged recording of the reading of Cold Sassy Tree was published by arrangement with the estate of Olive Ann Burns and was produced in 1993 by Blackstone Audiobooks, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Blackstone Audiobooks. If you would like to obtain additional information about our growing line of audiobooks, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.